Thank you very much. I would like to begin by thanking the organizers for having me here. I will talk today about timescales, persistence, and dynamic multiscaling in two-dimensional homogeneous isotropic turbulence. Some of you might not know all the terms in the titles, so I will explain them as I go along. This work has been done by three of my students who are now no longer my students. This is Dhruvaditto Mitra, who's now in Stockholm, Shomrindhi, who is in Nice, and Prasad Bedlikar, who's in Eindhoven. This is the support from various funding agencies in India. Okay, we've been studying especially dynamic multiscaling for several years, but that's the problem I will come to in the second part of the talk. In the first part of the talk, I will talk about the persistence problem, which has appeared very recently, and then we will go from there. But before I start with this part of the talk, let me show you a small movie. Perhaps all of you have seen such movies, but it illustrates what I have in mind. You can see this little black thing, that's a Lagrangian tracer particle in a two-dimensional flow. These are vertical regions, and you will see it merrily chugs along. It doesn't do very much. It goes all over until, and I hope it happens soon enough, I'm sorry, it's a bit slow. It gets trapped in a vertical region, and now here it's got trapped in a vertical region, and it goes round and round and round, and it stays in there forever. Forever and not forever, because the vertical region doesn't last forever in a turbulent flow, but it stays for a long time in that vertical region, and this has been known for several years. I mean, there are at least one paper I remember, which is from Tabeling's group. They had even tried to characterize it in experiments. Okay, so what I will try to do is to characterize the persistence of this Lagrangian particle in such a vertical region. And so this is how this part of the talk will be organized. This is the motivation. I will tell you a little bit about a problem in statistical mechanics, the problem of persistence, where it has attracted a lot of attention. Then I will switch to two-dimensional fluid turbulence. And then I will tell you how to use this parameter, which has a name, the Okubo-Weiss parameter, and I will tell you that this is a natural candidate for studying such persistence in two-dimensional fluid turbulence. And then I will conclude this part of the talk and then go on to the second part of the talk, which will be organized as such. I'll give you a brief history of dynamic multiscaling and some motivation, again, from critical phenomena and statistical mechanics. And then I will go on to describe a little bit of the three-dimensional work, which has been done with shell models, and then spend some more time talking about dynamic multiscaling in two-dimensional fluid turbulence. So all of you know these sorts of pictures. This is an audience of experts, so I don't need to show you. Here's a von Karman vortex street off the Chilean coast. And here is the great red spot in Jupiter. And this is the sort of experimental situation we'll really have in mind, a soap-filled turbulence. In this particular case, it's flow behind two cylinders, but we will really look at it excited in some other more periodic way. All right, so at the level of modeling, we will use, of course, the well-known equation, two-dimensional Navier-Stokes. We'll use the vorticity stream function formalism, so omega is that, and u follows from the stream function in this way, etc. All of you know this, I don't need to explain this to you. Of course, it is well known that two-dimensional fluid turbulence is quite different from three-dimensional turbulence, and you heard a very nice talk on it last week. John Bowman talked about the infinite number of conserved quantities. Typically, people just look at these two, the energy and the entropy. Of course, if you have viscosity, this is how the balance takes place. And it's different from 3D also insofar as there is no dissipative anomaly, at least in the absence of friction. So typically the spectrum is supposed to look like this. This is a schematic log-log plot. Energy flux is backwards, the inverse cascade, which is roughly minus 5/3, and an entropy flux forward cascade k to the minus 3. Okay, and what I will talk about today will be in this forward cascade regime. And I will, in our simulations, have what is called Ekman friction, which is induced by the air drag on a given soap film. And of course, if those of you who know about these things know that that modifies this exponent. It is k to the minus 3 plus delta, and that delta depends on the Ekman friction, so it is steeper. So this is what we will be concentrating on, okay, both in the first and the second parts of the talk. Okay, so now if you go back to this vorticity stream function formulation, then the Ekman friction comes in here. Okay, so this is just sucking out energy at all values of k. Okay, it's not like a viscosity, it's just a steady friction which is induced by the air drag on the thing. Okay, and you can non-dimensionalize things in various ways. This is the way in which we have done it. Sub-INJ stands for the injection. So L injection is the energy injection length scale. It is related inversely to the energy injection wave vector. Okay? Now let me tell you a little bit about the persistence problem. This is a problem that has attracted a lot of attention in non-equilibrium statistical mechanics. This is one of the earliest papers I know. And this is how you define it. Let phi be some non-equilibrium field fluctuating in space and time according to some dynamics, okay? So persistence is simply the probability that at a fixed point in space, the quantity, which is the sign of this object, this field, subtract its mean value from it, does not change up to a time t. Okay? And this has been studied for a variety of systems in granular flows.
That averages over t.
Well, average over the whole spatiotemporal box, right? Sorry. So the same t shouldn't be there. You're right. Okay.
But phi is a stationary field in space and time.
Yeah, it should be stationary. Typically stationary. But sometimes, if it is not stationary, then they do some transformations. Okay. Now, what is so great about such a probability? What is found is that in many cases. Many examples ranging from granular media to surface growth and so on, this probability scales as t to the minus an exponent theta, so it has a power law part. And that exponent is called the persistence exponent for that thing, and of course people look at various different universality classes and so on. As far as I know, such a persistence problem has not been studied from this perspective in the turbulence context, even though, you know, we often say there are many similarities between turbulence and critical phenomena. This particular thing has not been studied. And what we claim is that two-dimensional fluid turbulence gives us a very natural setting in which we can actually do this. Now, those of you who know about two-dimensional turbulence will know that if you look at the velocity gradient tensor A, which has components which are here, from it you can obtain the so-called Okubo-Weiss parameter lambda, which is a that's just words, okay, but for an incompressible flow in two dimensions, basically it's a determinant of A, okay? Now it is known, at least in the absence of Ekman friction and viscosity, etc., if lambda is positive, then the flow is vortical, and if it is negative, then the flow is extensional. And this characterization more or less goes through, at least at a practical level, even when you turn on Ekman friction and viscosity, etc. Okay? Now, of course, lambda can be shown to be zero. The mean value of lambda is zero, but the PDF of this lambda can be shown, this is another paper which I will not discuss today, is slightly asymmetrical about lambda equal to zero. Okay, vortical regions are a little more likely to occur than strain-dominated ones. All right, so again, that's a plot. I think this is a plot. Is it a plot of lambda? Okay, perhaps it's a plot of lambda. So now the question that we ask, given lambda, we have a clear way of distinguishing between vortical regions and extensional regions. So there are two types of questions that you can ask. How long does a Lagrangian particle stay in a region where lambda is greater than zero, which is a vortical region, or where lambda is less than zero, which is an extensional region, which I've also used the word centers and saddles sometimes. So if you take an Eulerian point of view, you can ask, how long does a lambda field not change sign at a position xy, that is the persistence time of a center or saddle? So you can do this both in Eulerian and Lagrangian pictures. Okay? So in the Lagrangian case, what we do is we follow n sub p particles and evaluate lambda along their trajectories. Okay? In the Eulerian case, we monitor the time evolution of lambda at n positions in the simulation domain. Okay? And this is something that I think any experimentalist could do just as easily as we do it in. For both cases, we find the time intervals tau over which lambda is greater than zero or lambda is less than zero, and the PDFs of these intervals characterize the analog of persistence in two-dimensional turbulence. Okay? So to be a little more specific, okay, all right. So we will denote PDFs by P. Subscripts E and L will stand respectively for Eulerian and Lagrangian frames. And the superscripts plus or minus will distinguish PDFs from vortical points from those from extensional points. Okay? So to find out the persistence time PDF, let us say of this one, we analyze the time series of lambda obtained from each of, say, NP Eulerian points and constructs PDF of the time intervals tau over which lambda remains positive. So suppose it enters a region where it is positive, then we monitor for how long it remains positive. Okay, and those times vary and we get PDFs. The same method applied to the time series of lambda obtained from each of the NP Lagrangian particles gives us PL plus tau and PL minus tau. Okay? So first let me, this is some simulation details. We have done simulations 512 squared and 1024 squared. That might look very modest, but the reason for having a modest spatial resolution is that we want very long runs. To get good statistics for this PDF tau, we want very long runs, so we sacrifice on the spatial resolution, but we, Now, those are parameters, so there's viscosity, there's Ekman friction, there is a sort of cosine-type forcing, that's the energy injection scale, that's the dissipation scale, there is a Taylor scale, there's a Taylor-Mayer scale, Reynolds number, and these times I will get to later, okay? These, I will come back to this later. But let me tell you what the time series of lambda looks like. You can't see this very well. For the Lagrangian case, you get this red stuff, and for the Eulerian case, you get the black plot. Okay? So a little more fluctuation in the Lagrangian case. All right? So this is the, that should be 10 to the plus 5. So this is a long time series. We get such time series. From these, we can, first thing that you can get, of course, are autocorrelation functions, which we do, and the Lagrangian case decays somewhat faster than the Eulerian case. Okay? But now we get what we are really after, namely the PDF of this persistence time, and I show you first the thing for the Lagrangian case where the particle is in a vortical region. Okay, so this is a log-log plot, and you can see that in the large time regime, there is clearly a straight line which is indicative of a power law, and actually you can get, these are data from all our four different runs, and you can get them all to collapse more or less if you rescale this time by the RMS of the value of the that time. Okay, so can we analyze this somewhat better? And this we have done from our highest Reynolds number simulation. To get better data, it is good to have a cumulative PDF rather than a standard PDF, because then you don't have binning errors. I'm sorry, this is not showing up very well. So this is the cumulative PDF, log of it versus of tau versus log of tau. And you can see there is a clear power law regime. Okay. In this power law regime, you can fit a power law, and if you do that, then because it's cumulative, there'll be one extra thing here, and from it you then extract this persistence exponent for two-dimensional fluid turbulence, which is that number. Those are what our error bars are like from a local slope analysis here. So basically, you start here and go till here. These are other times, don't worry about those that have been marked, okay? And within our calculation, which doesn't have huge spatial resolution because we need a lot of temporal illusion, this number seems to be insensitive to the Reynolds number, the energy injection wave vector, and the Ekman friction, okay? So whether it's really universal or not, I think more detailed studies will be required, both experimental and theoretical. I think it's a fairly straightforward experiment to do if you have a two-dimensional turbulence setup and you can track Lagrangian particles. Now, we can ask what happened to all the other PDFs, the PDFs in the Eulerian pictures, and also the PDF of the Lagrangian particle in extensional regimes. And there it turns out that all these are semi-log plots. So all of these are, they have exponential tails within our resolution. So there really is no analog of a persistence exponent for these other regimes, okay? And this, if you like, is a quantification of that movie which I showed you to begin with, where the Lagrangian particle just stayed for a long time in the vortical regime. Okay, and you can, these are for the Eulerian in vortical regime, strain-dominated regime, and so on. So from such tails, you can get these other times which I show. Oops, what did I do here? There were these other times that I had shown you. These are the times you can fish out of those exponential fits. So these are, they depend on every parameter in the problem, okay? So there's nothing universal about these times. What is qualitatively there is that for these cases, the persistence time PDF is just exponential. Okay, so far as I know, this has never been tried in a turbulence context to have such persistence exponents. So I hope certainly that our work will encourage people to look for such persistence things. In 2D, I think it is very clean because you have this nice Okubo-Weiss parameter. It gives you a natural way of formulating the persistence problem. And then the persistence time PDFs, you can get clearly and okay, these show exponential tails, and then this one has a power law tail. So the important one is a PDF of a Lagrangian particle in a vortical region, okay? And that has this exponent with plus minus 0.2. So it's not a very well-determined exponent, but it seems to be a clear exponent. Okay, so if you have questions about this part of the talk, I'll be happy to answer them now. Otherwise, I'll move on to the second part of the talk.
Are you relating it to the persistent time to diffusion of the particles in some sense?
I mean, not diffusion.
Like
I mean,
it is
Okay, I mean, if you're asking whether we've written down an effective model which does this, the answer is no, because we have just stayed with the full equations, okay? So it's an interesting question whether you can write down some stochastic model which will have this thing, but it should have enough structure in it to distinguish between this Lagrangian and Eulerian stuff. So my worry is that when you do that, you will eventually end up with something of the same complexity as 2D Navier-Stokes with Ekman friction. Okay, but I'm not sure. I mean, I haven't tried it in great detail. Okay? All right, so let me go on to the second part of my talk, which is, what we like to call dynamic multiscaling in fluid turbulence. I give a little bit of critical phenomena background because many of you, except Professor Ahlers, of course, knows all about critical phenomena. But this is the sort of thing that people did in the early 70s or the 80s. So people in those days used to look at spin systems at a critical point, let us say, and the spin-spin correlation function here denoted by gamma had this Paolo form. R here is the separation between the spins. T is not time. In these two slides, this and the next slide, it will not be time. This will be reduced temperature, which gives you the distance from the critical point. Forget about all the details about magnetic field. All I want you to note is that there is a power law dependence, 1 over r to the d minus 2 plus eta, where eta is one of the celebrated exponents in critical phenomena. Okay? And this happens because as you approach the critical temperature, the correlation length diverges. And if you're right at the critical temperature, you have this power law form for this correlation function. And in fact, this is one of the reasons why many people, at least in statistical mechanics, say that critical phenomena are a bit like turbulence, because even in turbulence we have these structure functions, and there also there is a power law dependence on separation. Now, if you look at the Fourier transform of that correlation function, you get this power law 1 over q to the 2 minus eta. Q is a wave vector. And now you can ask something which is completely natural in a condensed matter context. Can we do time-dependent correlation functions in Fourier space that would be q and omega dependence? Omega is the frequency, and to make a long, that also has a scaling form, but basically to make a very, very long story very short, this scaling is associated with the divergence of a relaxation time, and that relaxation diverges as this correlation length to a power z. Z is the so-called dynamic critical exponent, and you will recall that this correlation length also diverges as we go to the vicinity of the critical point. So to the extent that we say that inertial range the turbulence is like a critical phenomenon, the question is, can we figure out the analog of this dynamic critical exponent? All right, what we look at when we study inertial range properties in turbulence, we normally look at these order p equal time structure functions. So you take a velocity increment, that is u at point x plus r minus u at point x, but at the same time t, and you dot it with this thing so you get a longitudinal component. Then you take the pth power of it, and you, these angular brackets mean, let us say you're doing statistically steady turbulence, then it is an average over your non-equilibrium statistical steady state. And then if the separation r lies in the inertial range, that is, it is much larger than the Kolmogorov dissipation scale eta sub d, but much smaller than the large length scale at which energy is injected into the system, then this thing scales as r to the power zeta p. Okay? Now, the old phenomenology of Kolmogorov, of course, said that this zeta p is p divided by 3. But experiments and numerical simulations favor multi-scaling, which just means multi-exponent scaling, with zeta p a nonlinear, convex, monotone, increasing function of p. So I don't know whether I got one of these plots. Probably I didn't, so let me just draw it for you. The normal plot of such a zeta p versus p looks like, so if this is p divided by 3, then the actual data looks something like this. Okay, and this is p equal to 3, zeta p equal to 1. Okay, so these are what the actual data do. All right? And you can begin to see these differences quite clearly by the time you're at p equal to 4. Okay, so, you know, when we did critical phenomena, we knew about the exponent eta, which characterized the decay, the power law decay of correlation functions in real space. And then, if you worked hard enough, then you could also calculate and measure the dynamic scaling exponent z. The question is, what is the analog of z in turbulence? And if it is an analog, can we measure it? So the first problem with turbulence, of course, is this multi-scaling. That is, you don't have something simple scaling like p divided by 3. If it had been p divided by 3, if you go through the sort of dimensional analysis that goes into K41, you will find an exponent of z equal to 2/3. But actually, there is another subtlety, and that subtlety has to do with Eulerian and Lagrangian pictures. I mean, typically we write Navier-Stokes in the Eulerian frame, okay, with velocity u at position x and time t. And it turns out that here the dynamic scaling is trivial. Why is it trivial? Because of an effect which is called the sweeping effect, which also goes into the Taylor hypothesis. Basically, it says that, look, if you have a mean flow, then temporal separations temporal separations t are related linearly to spatial separations r, and therefore the dynamic exponent is trivially 1. Okay. Now you might have a little more hope with Lagrangian frames because Lagrangian particles are carried with the flow. And so actually the 2/3 that is often given as the dynamic scaling number in the absence of multiscaling should really be seen only for the Lagrangian case and not for the Eulerian case. And I think perhaps the only calculation of that is due to Kaneda many years ago, late 90s, okay, where he showed evidence in a numerical simulation for 2/3 and 1, right? You agree? I'm not misquoting your work? Okay. There is another way which was suggested by Belinicker and Lvov, which says, let us use an intermediate description called a quasi-Lagrangian description, which says that from any Eulerian field psi, I can construct the quasi-Lagrangian field psi hat at the point little r and t by considering the Eulerian field, but adding to it the position of a Lagrangian tracer particle, which at time zero was at point r0. Okay? So it looks like a mouthful, but in principle it is sort of you ride along with one Lagrangian particle and then just look at the Eulerian field, and if you can do that, then you subtract out the mean flow. And once you've subtracted out the mean flow, then you get rid of this trivial sweeping effect, and therefore you can expect some non-trivial dynamic scaling. Now you will recall that when I looked at equal time scaling, I looked at these order p structure functions. Now if you want to confront time-dependent structure functions, you have to allow for such time-dependent structure functions. So there'll be p such velocity differences, and in principle, p different times, okay? And this r relates to the spatial separation between the points. So let's look at the simplest case, which as you will see will be complicated enough. That is, I take most of these times, in fact, p minus one of these times to be zero, and only this first time to be separated by t. Okay. So the first surprise is, I'll give you the results first and then show you data, that given such a time-dependent structure function, there are different ways of extracting time scales. And what we will find is that given a time scale, we will then define the exponent z sub p by such dynamic multiscaling on zz. That is, recall, in critical phenomena, we said tau diverges as the correlation length psi to the power of z. So here we are saying t sub p obtained in some way from such a structure function goes as r to the power zp. Okay? Now, initially, most of the studies of this thing have relied on simple shell models like this one. Those of you who have never seen a shell model for fluid turbulence, let me not try to explain everything to you. It's a baby model in which you have complex scalar velocities because you're in some sort of logarithmically discretized Fourier space. Here is the analog of viscous dissipation, and this is the analog of the nonlinear term. And it is just designed to give you lots of scaling range so you can get good numerical data, but you can't really expect it to have vorticity and all these things that we know and love in turbulence are not in these models. However, they have been very good learning models where you can get large inertial ranges and you build in lots of conservation laws and so on. I should point out that here by fiat in these shell models, the velocity at shell n interacts only with nearest and next nearest neighbors. This is not what happens if you take the v dot grad b term and write it in Fourier space. There, every mode interacts with every other mode. Therefore, some people say this model does not have the sweeping effect because the largest eddies, which would be at small n, small wave vector, do not directly drive the smallest eddies, which are at large k. Okay. Therefore, some people say that these are a rough, if you like, quasi-Lagrangian description of turbulence, and therefore, if there is some time dependence, such structure functions should show the sort of dynamic multiscaling that I am talking about. Okay, so we have studied this and a variety of other shell models. I will not go over all that. And, this is just to tell you that we know how to solve these problems. And we run them very, very long. So we ran them, initially when we ran them 10,000 times longer than anyone else to get good data for the types of structure functions, time-dependent structure functions that I talked about, okay? So we did forced turbulence, decaying turbulence, etc. So don't worry about all that. Concentrate on this. That is, this we could obtain time-dependent structure functions, and indeed we could extract from them multiscaling exponents, which depended on how this time was extracted. I will tell you what that means in a minute. And also, there was a suggestion by an extension of the Frisch-Parisi multifractal model to time-dependent cases. There was a suggestion due to Lvov, Podivilov, and Prokatchia saying that these exponents Zp should be equal, should be related linearly to the equal time exponents, and we could check that this was true. Now, I've been saying several times that the results for the exponents depend on how you extract the time. So let's look at extracting the time in this way. This I will call an integral time. So that's I is for integral, p is for order p. For the moment, just set n equal to 1. Don't worry about m, okay? So what I do is basically I integrate the time-dependent structure function, normalize it by the time-independent one. Clearly, that has the dimensions of a time. And it's an integral time because I got it by an integral, and it depends on P because it is the order P structure function. Given this time, I mean, my calculation gives me this time-dependent structure function, so I can obtain this time by this prescription. Given this time, I can extract from it an exponent z by making this ansatz. So I make a log-log plot of this time versus r, and then the slope of that will give me the exponent, which of course now will depend on p, I, and m. If you do non-zero m, it just goes through. You can extract the time by taking derivatives also. So again, just for ease of demonstration, just set n equal to 2, and then you will see that this quantity has the dimensions of a time. So this we call a derivative time, superscript d, p and m. And again, we make an ansatz that this scales as r to this thing. And then from log-log plots and slopes thereof, you can extract that dynamic exponent. Now, I mentioned this multifractal model, and I said that it predicts the following bridge relations. This one for the integral time was first derived by Lvov, Prokatchia, and Podivilov. And for the what we showed is first, just by, you know, from that multifractal model, that this derivative time exponents are actually different. I mean, the bridge relation is different for them, okay? And I mean, that is where it stood, because nobody was really measuring these things. I can, if anybody wants, I can go through this later. Let me not go through this algebra, which tells you basically why you get these types of bridge relations. The first people to study such things were Biferale, Boffetta, Celani, and Toschi, but they didn't use actual time-dependent structure functions. They used an exit time method. But our group has been concentrating on this dynamic multiscaling by actually calculating those time-dependent structure functions, first within shell models, and now very recently we have done, and this will be the real point of my talk, that we can do this for two-dimensional Navier-Stokes equation with Ekman friction. So before I show you all the results for two dimensions, let me show you some of our shell model results. So this is what one of these structure functions looks like. N plays the role of length scale. This is really labeling the shells in the shell model. And if you plot these versus time, then you get these curves. I mean, you get these nice looking curves only when you average for very long. If you don't average very long, you will not get such good curves, okay? So from such curves, we can extract those times by doing either the integrals I told you about or taking the derivatives I told you about. Okay, so for example, here is the integral scale time, order 5 and n equal to 1. And you get this, these are the data, that's the slope and that's the line, okay? You can ask, how do you get error bars on this? Well, we do this 50 times over, and we, you know, actually then do mean value and mean value and standard deviation, and that's, this is for the decaying case, but don't concentrate on that, but we can also do it for the decaying case. Here it is for the derivative time scales, okay? So this, we had the structure functions, we took derivatives like I told you about, and then from those derivatives we got the time, again log-log plots, and then you get, okay. We have done this for passive scalars also, okay? So passive scalar actually turns out, if you do the Kraken model, then because of the delta correlation of the noise in the Kraken model, which I will not describe today, you get, even though you get equal time, you get multiscaling for equal time exponents, you do not get any dynamic multiscaling. You get, there's simple scaling here. I can explain that later to anyone who wants. But if you actually take an advection diffusion equation where the advection velocity comes from the Goyer-Schell model, then you get non-trivial equal time scaling and dynamic multiscaling. So I guess I have said all that. So I don't need to repeat it, okay? Now, okay, I don't need to define the Krishnan model. This was the passive scalar shell model we used. So, let me not show you all these details. What's this? Okay, this is some data heavy plot, so just give a second. Right. Okay, so let me just show you what is the quality of the data, at least for the shell model. Okay, we can get very good quality data. These are the equal time exponents. So this is just Goy model, okay? And this is the value we would have obtained for this dynamic exponent if we had used the bridge relation, okay? So the theory means bridge relation. This is what we would have obtained if we had used these values of the zetas. This is what we actually measure. Okay, and you can see that to the extent that these numbers agree in the two columns, we have a verification within numerical error of the bridge relations within the shell models. Similarly for the derivative timescales. And again, I want you to note that the exponents that come from the integral scale are distinctly different from the exponents that come from the derivative scale. Okay, so this is completely unheard of in critical phenomena. You can extract times in different ways. You will change amplitudes, but not exponents. But this, if you like, you can either call a complication of multiscaling or the richness of multiscaling, depending on your point of view. Okay? But I would call it the richness of multiscaling, that really you have to have an infinity of times, and an infinity of exponents, and an infinity of bridge relations. It's not a completely trivial measurement to make. We have often talked to Eberhard about it, but at the moment he still thinks it is beyond what can be measured in his facilities. This is a similar data for the passive scalar case, which I am not discussing in detail, but we have done it. So of course you can say that, look, shell models are okay, they're nice, but can't you do something better? Can't you actually measure a quasi-Lagrangian structure function and show from it that you get such things in some real turbulence? Okay, so this is the best we've been able to do, which is to do a 2D flow, again with Ekman friction. And we actually generate quasi-Lagrangian fields, which I think strictly speaking has not been done before. And from it we obtain dynamic multiscaling, but we use vorticity structure functions because it is known that the velocity structure functions in the forward cascade regime show simple scaling even at the equal time level. So we have concentrated on vorticity structure functions which do show multiscaling. Okay. So in the statistical steady state that we get, this is what a quasi-Lagrangian vorticity field looks like, okay? And people often say that at the level of equal time structure functions, Eulerian and quasi-Lagrangian structure functions should be the same, because basically, look, just you're referring the, how do you get a quasi-Lagrangian field? You refer, you take the Eulerian field at a point r, but add to it the position of a Lagrangian tracer, which at time t equal to 0 was at some point. But it's still basically Eulerian, and so for an equal time case, you would expect the two to be the same. At the second order level, it's a trivial identity with Fourier transform, so that you will just check your code. But here is an explicit calculation of the third order structure function versus R. Red is Eulerian, blue is quasi-Lagrangian, and the two agree. Okay? And again, you need to run very long to get such data of such quality. Now, from the quasi-Lagrangian structure function, you can obtain quasi-Lagrangian fields, you can obtain quasi-Lagrangian structure functions. So I show you here a pseudo-color plot of the equal time structure function order 3, okay? So if you go too far away, of course, you will begin to see the anisotropy, but if you look here and then do the two-dimensional analog of SO3, that is, you do SO2, you average over the angles, you can get pretty good data for, yes?
This is x and y?
This is x and y, sorry, yeah. I guess that's minus pi to pi. Okay. All right, so from this, we have a measurement of the exponents for vorticity structure functions. Again, red is Eulerian, blue is quasi-Lagrangian, and as expected, but never measured before, there is this sort of clear evidence of multiscaling at the equal time level, okay? Now the question is, are you brave enough to do time-dependent quasi-Lagrangian structure functions? And at least my young collaborators are. So we measure those types of quasi-Lagrangian structure functions. We get the quasi-Lagrangian field, we do that. And from each one, we extract times, okay? So this is a plot, log-log plot, of the integral scale time for the second order structure function. This is what the data look like, okay? And that's the best fit line. Again, the way we get error bars is to do 50 such, let us say, get the means and the standard deviations. I'm embarrassed to see that this is natural logs, okay? So clearly we can't do log base 10 here yet. Again, spatial resolution is low, not because we can't do very big, but really to get good data here, it is more important to run long rather than to have a big simulation domain, okay? Now, how well do we do? Well, not too bad. Again, as far as I know, with this level of accuracy, this is the only study which has been done. So here are the equal time exponents and for the vorticity, okay? Remember, and you should also remember that in this case, that is, two-dimensional fluid turbulence with Ekman friction, these exponents actually depend on the Ekman friction, okay? All numerical data are consistent with a dependence of these exponents of Ekman friction, even at the level of the spectrum. That what we normally say k to the minus 3 in the forward cascade regime in two-dimensional turbulence is actually k to the minus 3 plus delta, where delta depends, unfortunately, on the amount of Ekman friction. Okay? So those are the things. And theory, again, means the analogous bridge relations. And you can see that the theory agrees with the measurement, okay, within error bars. And again, note that the integral time is distinctly different from the derivative time. So really we need an infinity of time scales and an infinity of exponents, and if you have enough muscle, then you can check that these are all consistent with the bridge relations. We also did some direct Eulerian measurements with Eulerian time-dependent structure functions. I'm showing you here a spectrum, okay? And I'm showing you what happens to the spectrum as we increase the Ekman friction. Of course, in principle, this is not a surprise. If the Ekman friction is very low, you are seeing a bit of the inverse cascade, and then as you increase it, it gets cut off, and it gets cut off even further. And of course, if you were doing fits in here, this exponent would be changing too. The interesting thing is that when you cut this off, okay, by just Ekman friction, you also suppress the sweeping effect. So here it turns out that even if you do not use quasi-Lagrangian structure functions, you will get non-trivial dynamic scaling with the Eulerian fields, but cut off with the sweeping effect cut off because of this Ekman friction. Okay? So at least in 2D turbulence, there seems to be another way of controlling controlling the sweeping effect, but not a very unphysical one, because actually in all physical realizations, at least the soap film ones of 2D turbulence, Ekman friction is always present, okay, because of the air drag. All right. Okay. So here is the set of conclusions for this part of the talk. We have checked that bridge relations hold for the vorticity structure functions in the forward cascade in 2D turbulence. Okay, this is an MHD thing which I'm not talking about today. We've done it for a shell model for MHD too, but I will not discuss that today. And at least we saw that ours was the only quasi-Lagrangian study, but 2 days ago, let me just show this to you. Our good friends from Italy have also been studying this problem, and they have also looked at multi-time, multi-scale correlation functions, and this was submitted 2 days ago to the archive for 3D turbulence. Okay, their scheme for doing quasi-Lagrangian is not exactly the same as ours, but it is related, of course. And they also have looked at set bridge relations, but only for the integral time scale. And not surprisingly, their error bars are not as good as ours because it's 3D and so on. But I did want to tell you that this problem in this 3D case is being considered by these people. You might have seen this on the archive 2 days ago. So with that, I thank you. I'll be happy to answer any questions that you have. Yes.
I have a question to your first part of the talk.
Yes.
The Lagrangian persistence time should be infinite for the Euler equation, right? Because it's frozen along.
You're right. I mean, you know, also for laminar flow. If you're stuck in a vortex, you're stuck in there forever.
So my question would be, how does your persistent time for the Lagrangian one depend on viscosity?
Wait, sorry, excuse me, did I say something that I didn't want to say? For the Euler case, the full circulation is conserved, right? But won't the things break down? And will there be no exchange between vortical regions and extensional regions?
I was naively thinking that
should not viscosity.
Right. So you're right. So there is a subtlety in the new going to zero limit. Okay. You're right. Yes. Right.
So
yes. Sorry.
Would there be a chance to connect these two parts and have bridge relations for the PDFs of the Eulerian statistics and the Lagrangian statistics of the persistence time in the first part of the talk?
And related to the second part of my talk, that's the last.
Bridge relation for these scales.
You are asking. It's a very good question. It's the last line of the paper that I'm writing now. So I thought about it, but I don't have an answer. Okay.
That would be very nice to connect this exponential parallel
thing to
and have some bridge relation to achieve as
BF. Right. I mean, I should also mention that, of course, there are people who do the following Lagrangian measurements. They define structure functions, but which do not have any spatial component, but only along a Lagrangian trajectory. So then the increment is the time along a Lagrangian trajectory. And people do such measurements and try to come up with relations between those and the equal time exponents. I mean, this 28th author PRL also has some data on that. Okay.
I mean, for the equal time exponents, for the bridge relations between quantities for the dissipation,
yes,
and for the velocity, there are people that tried the numerics in the 90s already to Itamar, and made some predictions for bridge relations. Connecting energy dissipation rate correlation and velocity correlation.
Okay, those I have not looked at. Okay, but that is something we can do also.
And they checked the max within the
full price. Yeah, no, that's a good suggestion. I will look at that. Right.
More questions? This is not the case. Let's talk about a little once more.
Thank you.